right, friends, we've got Ed Henry with us today. We're going to talk about the President of the United States, number 41, George H.W. Bush, passed away yesterday. We're going to reflect a little bit. Welcome to the show, Ed.
It's so great to be back with you.
Let's just get right to it. Been a busy day for your business. I know before I went to bed last night, you guys were all over that. You were on Fox and Friends this morning. Tell us what it's been like the last few hours.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a blur. You know, when we do Fox and Friends, we get up, the show starts usually at 6 a.m. We contemplated starting at 5 a.m. On the East Coast, but for various production reasons, decided to stick with the 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. But normally I try to get to bed by 9 or 10 p.m. the night before, because you're getting up, you know, 3:30, 4 a.m. I'm not saying woe is me. I'm just saying it's a long day. And so I had gotten to sleep by, you know, 9, 10 o'clock on the East, and got woken up about midnight saying, hey, we're blowing up the rundown. The stories we were going to do, you know, for example, there are a lot of important news stories we can't forget. The Alaska earthquake came out of nowhere, you know, injuries and whatnot. The infrastructure problems they have now, you know, very serious story. And then the current president, President Trump, at the G20, his dinner with the Chinese president on Saturday night, all kinds of big stories, as you can imagine. So I got woken up about midnight saying, hey, we're going to change everything. So I went back to sleep, or at least tried to. And about 2:33 a.m. got woken up again saying, hey, might have to come in to be live starting at 5 a.m. instead of 6, as I mentioned. And so basically I didn't sleep much, and that's fine, because what you end up doing is taking out the iPad and reading like crazy. And I'm fortunate that I've covered politics for a long time. I covered, I covered Bush 41 from a distance, I want to say, because I was a very young reporter, so I don't want to exaggerate, you know, what I was doing. But Bush 43, I was covering day-to-day for CNN, and then, later covered President Obama as well as President Trump for CNN and then Fox. And so I've covered several presidents, and particularly the stories that we could get into, you know, when I was covering Bush 43. Bush 41 was around the White House a fair bit. We went up to Kennebunkport with the younger President Bush and got a chance to see the older President Bush. And so that was my interaction, that kind of thing, and some of the, you know, political conventions and whatnot. And I saw a man who, you know, was a patriot, who was all about public service and also was about decency. You know, it's a pretty tough, rough, mean time in politics. And this was someone, yeah, maybe we're getting nostalgic, maybe it's a different era. But I think there's nothing wrong with talking about, even when there are sharp differences between the political parties and whatnot, there's nothing wrong with focusing on where we can come together and focusing on, just human dignity and respect. And basic polite, you know, being polite and being a gentleman. And I think all of those words describe George H.W. Bush.
I was talking to someone earlier today and mentioned that it's rare today that everybody should be able to come together and just do the right thing. And I really think that that's going to be the case here.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think George H.W. Bush is someone who is a unifying force, because one of the stories I think we should get into, and we talked about on Fox and Friends, because this is a kind of a universal tale when parties transfer power, and we saw this now with Nancy Pelosi coming in, and we'll see if in fact she becomes speaker. It's not official yet, and whether or not she really wants to work with President Trump, because Democrats, we should not forget, even when we talk about, you know, coming together and whatnot, the last 2 years Democrats have done nothing but resist, largely. And I don't think President Trump should get off the hook, by the way. He hasn't exactly brought the two parties together. So let's not leave that out. And we can get into that if you want. Or maybe we'll just talk about the old days. But I think George H.W. Bush has the opportunity here, the life and legacy as we celebrate it, to remind people that it's not so bad to come together. I mean, you're not going to come together every day. I'm not saying that the parties should give up their fights. I'm not saying that there are not sharp differences between the two major parties. That's healthy. That's normal. But the point I wanted to make was, one of the stories we talked about was the 92 campaign. And I was a Cub reporter then, and that was the beginning. I was not covering it day to day like I did future campaigns, but I was covering it from the periphery. And it was mean and nasty. I mean, Bill Clinton was a young upstart as a sort of centrist Democrat, said some tough things about George H.W. Bush. Let's not let the Republicans off the hook. I mean, they were going after Bill Clinton from, you know, personal scandals and the rest. And George H.W. Bush came out on the wrong end of that. He lost. And yet he wrote this letter to Bill Clinton on the morning of January 20th, 1993. You can find it online. But the gist of it was, Bill, as I sat down, I walked into the Oval Office to write this letter to you, Mr. Incoming President. I still have the same awe that I had of this office, you know, when I first walked in. I hope you'll have it, and I hope you'll succeed, because your success is our success. Those are the words not of Ed Henry, but of George H.W. Bush. And I think whether you're a Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green, Socialist, whatever you are, the fact of the matter is, what's wrong with that? You know, why can't we get back to at least some of that, where the good of the country comes before people's personal interests and people's partisan interests. And I really do think that George H.W. Bush embodied that.
Let's go way back. His military service. His baseball playing days.
Let's go back. Baseball. So I'll talk about baseball. He was captain of the Yale baseball team. When you go onto Twitter or other social media, you'll see this great photo of Babe Ruth. I'm a Yankees fan. You and I have spoken before when I wrote the book 42 Faith about Jackie Robinson. And there's a great photo of a young George H.W. Bush playing first base. He was a lefty first baseman, by the way, which is what I was in high school for St. John the Baptist on Long Island. I certainly wasn't as good as he was. I didn't play college ball. But Babe Ruth and George H.W. Bush meeting up at the Yale on the Yale baseball diamond. That's a great photo. His war service, you know, I mean, we can get into the baseball more, but you're right to raise the war service. This is a guy who, you know, when you think about how the mainstream media played George H.W. Bush, how they covered him by and large. And I was a Cub reporter then, but was watching what my colleagues were doing. And they largely portrayed him as sort of a rich, out of touch patrician. And that word patrician, by the way, you can see AP and others are using it now even. And I think it missed the fact that, yes, was he rich? Absolutely. Did he come from privilege? Absolutely. He was the son of a senator. Let's not try to cover that up. Let's be honest about it. But here he is right after Pearl Harbor, December 7, 1941. Right after that, he watches the attack by the Japanese and defers on going to Yale. He later went to Yale. So, again, let's not leave out the fact he did come from some privilege. He was very lucky in the breaks he got. But he defers, and instead of going to college, enlists in the Navy and serves very bravely, nearly loses his life. And just this idea, I mean, how many young people today among the millennials could just say, hey, I'm going to defer going to this wonderful school. I'm going to defer getting up to Wall Street. At the time, George H.W. Bush's father, Prescott, was not in the Senate in the 40s quite yet. He was, I believe, on Wall Street, you know, helping to run a financial firm. And so if George H.W. Bush had gone right to Yale instead of going to war, he would have made more money a lot sooner. But he deferred all that to save his, you know, to serve his country. What a wonderful lesson for all of us.
And we're losing pretty much all of the greatest generation in the next few years. And his life, and again, you mentioned privilege and it's there, but I think he kind of represents a lot of people in the greatest generation.
He certainly does. I think Bob Dole does as well. I've gotten to know him in covering politics for a long time. And you know, quick aside, because Bob Dole, like Bill Clinton, had plenty of differences, even though they were in the same party. He had differences with George H.W. Bush. They had a bitter campaign battle, as you know, in 1988. Stop lying about my record, Dole said. In New Hampshire, he was so upset about what Bush was doing to him as his campaign sunk. But Dole, as a quick aside, today, even well into his 90s, goes to the World War II Memorial in D.C. basically every weekend to greet other World War II vets and surprise them and thank them for their service, even though, you know, with the advance of time, you know, Senator Dole has some trouble getting around these days himself. He wants to thank people for service. So you're right. I think both Bob Dole, George H.W. Bush, they personify, you know, the greatest generation that is slipping away from us. So many are dying so rapidly when you look at the numbers. And we can't forget about what they did to save America in defeating the Nazis. You know, we have these political battles that you and I have been alluding to, and some of them pale in comparison, many of them, most of them. You know, sure, there are big battles today. I don't want to minimize them. There are a lot of big fights today. But the way people throw around Nazis and you're a racist and all of these things today, they should really stop and think where we've come, you know, how far we've come, and think about, you know, what the young George H.W. Bush was doing when he was serving the Navy in terms of helping us win World War II. That literally saved, you know, life as we know it.
Certainly. You look at the buildup to the presidency, the resume that he had, the qualifications that he had. I'm not talking about his performance as president, but has there been another person more qualified on paper to be president than George H.W. Bush?
I think you ask a great question, and I'd answer it two ways. Number one, no. there was no one, you know, Democrat or Republican, better prepared for the presidency than George H.W. Bush, certainly from a strict resume perspective, but I don't want to just say resume because that minimizes his people skills and his integrity, frankly, his character, because it's not just about resume for any profession, but certainly not for president. But I mean, think about it. I talked about how he, it's almost like bookends, you know, World War II, Pearl Harbor, December 7, 1941, he enlists shortly thereafter, and the bookend being he's serving as president in 1989 as the Berlin Wall crumbles and the Cold War, you know, comes to an end.
Yeah.
Think about that. It's almost breathtaking. You know, what better man was prepared to deal with the fall of the Soviet Union, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the remaking of Europe and elsewhere than George H.W. Bush? I can't think of a better person. Now, was he perfect? No. Was he infallible? No. He didn't get reelected in part because despite what he did on the world stage, there were maybe, you know, too many people here at home who thought that he had taken his eye off the ball in the economy. I think, by the way, Ross Perot had a big role in that as well. And if it had been a one-on-one race with Bill Clinton, George H.W. Bush very well might have been reelected. But Ross Perot certainly took some votes. Why did he get in the race? He got in the race because maybe George H.W. Bush took his eye off the economy and some of the domestic issues as he was dealing with these great problems and these great opportunities on the world stage. But the second way I'd answer it is, again, I'd bring it back to this moment. We've been talking about the partisanship and whatnot. Another part of the moment is that we have the first ever businessman president. And is he perfect? Like I said, no. Like George H.W. Bush, he has his faults as well, Donald J. Trump. But I think the American people decided they were tired of the resumes. They were tired of the same people in Washington, Democrat or Republican, power to one another. They wanted to try something different. And I suspect not just in 2020 when we have our next presidential election, but beyond that, we're going to feel the reverberations of the Trump administration for some time to come because he has shaken up business as usual and politics as usual, as you know better than anyone, in a way that we haven't seen. So I just want to be clear. To answer your question, no, we've never had someone better prepared to be president. But when he was elected in 1988, as you know, it's a whole other generation now. And we didn't have social media then. We didn't have all kinds of things. America's still evolving. He was, I think, best prepared for that moment, what I mentioned about the fall of communism and the Berlin Wall and the rest. But now we've got a new president facing new challenges, and he'll have to face the American people in 2020, just as George H.W. Bush faced them in 1992.
It would be hard to talk about this president and not mention just one word, and that being family.
Oh, boy. I'm so moved by when you go on social media and you see this political cartoonist from the Clarion Ledger, I think he is.
Yeah.
Who a few months ago when Barbara Bush, the former first lady, passed away, he did a really remarkable cartoon that had Barbara Bush going up to heaven and seeing a little girl who, of course, would be Robin, who's the 4-year-old daughter that they lost to cancer, you know, way back when. And just a thought bubble that said, "Robin," you know, all exclamation points, like they were being reunited. Well, that same cartoonist, fast forward to today, has done a follow-up, and it's George H.W. Bush, very relevant to our conversation, on a World War II Navy plane, getting off that plane and arriving in heaven, it appears, and walking towards his widow and wife and late daughter. And their thought bubble to George H.W. Bush is, "We were waiting for you." What a moving, emotional way to think about the three of them, but beyond that, as you say, the many children, grandchildren, and now great-grandchildren that George H.W. Bush leaves behind. It was family first with him, despite all of the career choices he made and the campaigns and the long hours. Again, was he perfect? I'm sure he wasn't. I'm sure there were times that, as you look back in his 80s and 90s, he said, "Maybe I should have been there for this or that," and rather than being on a plane to New Hampshire or wherever he might have gone. Was he perfect? No. Like none of us are perfect. But I think, my colleague Brett Baer did a phenomenal obituary piece that we've run on Fox News. You can find it at foxnews.com, I'm sure. Where George H.W. Bush, when he leaves the presidency, says, "Look, it's okay, I lost. Here's that letter I wrote to Bill Clinton. I'm rooting for his success. And now I've got three job titles that are the most important of all: husband, father, and grandfather."
Yeah.
And that, I think that sums up George H.W. Bush pretty darn well.
We could go on and on and on about his life. My favorite president of all time, Ronald Reagan. Following him, very, very different people, but the love of their country was one of the qualities that they both had.
Absolutely. And I mean, look, you can debate this, and historians will be going through this for a long time. I was talking to my colleague Dana Perino on Fox and Friends about it. She served Bush 43, of course, and said that, in the final days of that administration, Bush 43 kept saying, "Look, I just read three biographies," he was saying in 2008. "I recently read three biographies of George Washington. And if historians are still trying to figure out his legacy, I'm not going to worry about my darn legacy." It was the way George W. Bush put it, because, you can't do it in the moment. And I think the same for George H.W. Bush. I'd make a couple points. One is, when he left in 1992, in that letter I mentioned he wrote in 1993, the handoff to Bill Clinton, as a young reporter, if you had asked me to write a biography then, I suspect that I and many others would have written that he was a man with a great resume, as you said before, who nonetheless maybe missed his moment and was kind of seen as a failed one-term president. But he had the courage and the patience to say, "I'm not going to second-guess Bill Clinton or second-guess my son or later second-guess Barack Obama, and instead be patient that time is going to be on my side." And to your point, Ronald Reagan accomplished plenty, a much different legacy than George H.W. Bush, but George H.W. Bush wound up carving out a very own strong legacy of his own. And I guess the point I'd make when you bring up Reagan is that, who better, when we talked about the resume or the approach, than Ronald Reagan to deal with the evil empire, right? Part one of all of that in the Cold War, peace through strength, trust but verify. I'm not sure George H.W. Bush would have been the right guy for that in 1983, 1985, 1986. That wasn't his way. But the resume you talked about, he was tested as a diplomat, which Ronald Reagan wasn't, right? And so Ronald Reagan, as you look at fate, you look at American history, maybe God had a plan that Ronald Reagan was the man to stand up to the evil empire. But if George H.W. Bush was in position as a former ambassador to the UN, envoy to China, CIA director, all the rest, he was in place, as fate would have it, to be the diplomat to take what Reagan had done and that legacy. And then, because remember, the Berlin Wall didn't crumble on Reagan's watch. It crumbled after. And it was George H.W. Bush who was there to help put the world back together. And so, was he perfect at it? No. Did he make mistakes? He'd be the first to tell you that he did. But he was pretty darn well prepared and really rose to the occasion. And the man met the moment, I think.
I don't know if you remember, but I always end with a word of prayer. Can I pray with you just for
a second? Absolutely, sir. Absolutely.
Father, I thank you for our friend Ed Henry and the work that he does. Father, when you see him on television, you see a professional, and I appreciate that. Bless him and his family and the work that he does. Help him to report the news, which is what we want to hear in today. I pray that you would be with the family of President George H.W. Bush, and as they mourn the loss of a great man, that you comfort them and help them to know that the memories that they have will be down in the history books. Father, thank you for our country. Bless this nation. Again, thank you for our friend Ed Henry. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Ed, it's always good to get a hold of Fox, and they work with us so well. You've been on more than once now.
Let's do it again. It's always an enjoyable conversation. I appreciate your prayer. I appreciate your faith, and I appreciate your approach to these big issues in such a thoughtful way.
I'm going to have to get your buddy Pete Hegseth on here.
Well, let's do that. Maybe we'll do it together.
I know Pete. We worked together in an organization called Vets for Freedom several years ago. So I know Pete, and I just not reached out. I mean, I got to do that. I got
to
get that.
Yeah, you should. Talk to Fox PR about it, and I bet you they'll want to do it. I appreciate your time today. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Ed. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Good morning again, and welcome to a special edition of Fox and Friends. We are remembering the life of an American hero known simply as Poppy to his family, but known to all of us as George Herbert Walker Bush, the 41st President of the United States, passing away at the age of 94.
The World War II veteran and patriot was the longest living president in U.S. history, Bush 41, leaving behind a legacy as a lifelong public servant.
I watched my father at an early age, not realizing what he was up to, doing a lot of charitable works. My mother pounded into us early on, do something for others. It's always been a part of my life, but I really believe it. I really believe there can be no definition of a successful life that does not include service to others.
And this lifetime public servant died last night, nearly 8 months after the death of his beloved wife, Barbara.
And we have the distinct honor and privilege of bringing in Britt Hume, longtime host, of course, of Special Report, now a Fox News senior contributor. And Britt, I grew up wanting to be Britt Hume covering the White House for ABC News. You had a front row seat on history. Talk about this man that you saw up close.
Well, my experience of him goes back at least to 1980 when I covered his presidential campaign in the primaries in 1980, which, of course, he lost to Ronald Reagan in the end and then was chosen to be his vice president, where he served, as you all know, for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And then when he went into the White House, I covered his presidency. So I've known him. I knew him a long time. And, you know, the word that comes to mind when I think of him is character. This was an extraordinarily gracious man who was, you know, humble in victory and similarly humble in defeat. And he's a man of a different era. But for all that, and for all of his personal kindness and the fact that he was so extraordinarily nice, as so many people have said, mm-hmm. he had steel in him. And I particularly remember, Ed, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, which led eventually to the first Gulf War. We were in an era then when, after Vietnam, the Americans' taste for armed combat anywhere had shrunk, and it was, people referred to it as Vietnam Syndrome. And the president rallied a coalition of nations to fight together to drive Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. In order to do that, he got a resolution from the United Nations that authorized that action. And there had been a series of United Nations resolutions which Saddam had ignored, but here was another one that authorized this coalition to go and remove his army from Kuwait. And everyone should remember that at the time, we went to the UN. He went to the UN and got that resolution and built that coalition before he had approval from Congress, mm-hmm. which he then sought. And it was a close-run thing. And a number of prominent Democrats voted no, but it passed. Mm-hmm. And then there were predictions there'd be a terrible bloodshed in the desert, and it was not. It was a walkover. It was over in a matter of days, and Saddam Hussein was driven out of Kuwait. And it was an extraordinary success, which the president said publicly that he hoped it eliminated Vietnam syndrome. I'm not sure it fully did, but it went a long way at that time.
Absolutely.
Britt, at one point, President George H.W. Bush was listed as one of the, before his presidency, as one of the most overrated, the 10 most overrated men. And he threw a party for the rest of the overrated men, and he stood on a chair and he gave a toast. Speak to that grace and levity in the face of criticism by the press, and your thoughts on whether that is remarkable.
Well, he had a sense of humor, and he was, you know, he was willing to make light of things. And his method of dealing with criticism was not quite to turn the other cheek. And in the rough and tumble of the campaign in 1988, he played hardball, but the event you mentioned, it was characteristic of him to try to make light of the situation and diffuse it in that way, and I think it certainly did that. There are people who never overcame their antipathy to him, and he was not well regarded by some key figures in the media. George Will, the columnist, never cared for him. Maureen Dowd wrote a lot of columns about him, ridiculing him, and her columns absolutely dripped with class envy. But I think that his presidency stands as kind of an example now of grace and courage and character. And I think that he sort of overcame all that criticism. You know, he was born a blue blood, a New England aristocrat who made his own way, as others have described, in Texas, basically on his own, and became a Texan. And that's where he ran for office from. And, of course, that's where W. grew up. W. is much more of a Texan because he was born down there than his father was. Mm-hmm. But that was really who he became.
Britt, as somebody who knows D.C. as well as you do, what is George H.W. Bush's legacy in the nation's capital when it comes to party politics?
Well, he had no antipathy to members of the other party. And I remember, you know, one of his buddies when he was in the years that he served in the House of Representatives was Dan Rostenkowski, the Democrat from Illinois, a legendary powerhouse figure who was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, the Tax Writing Committee. And you know, they were good friends, close friends. And it was very like Bush that he would develop a friendship like that across the aisle. And Rostenkowski later said that he used to think, you know, he would see then Congressman Bush in a hearing, and after it wasn't very long, he seemed to stop paying attention, and then he would sometimes leave early, and he thought, this guy may be a lightweight. He doesn't seem to care about the depth of these issues. But he said he would later have a conversation with him in which it became clear to him that Bush had gotten the gist of the testimony almost immediately and had it figured out in his own mind and didn't see the need to hang around any longer. Mm-hmm. He famously had a short attention span, which is in some ways a Bush family characteristic. That was the same way. They both got the attention span of mosquitoes, but he was sharp and he made a lot of friends across the aisle, and you know, he was never a bitter partisan. You know, he played rough when he had to, but he was never a bitter partisan. And things in Washington were not nearly, they were divisive, but they're not nearly as divisive as they are now. And his personality, I think, contributed to that atmosphere.
He also didn't like broccoli, and I seem to remember that became like a national scandal for a while there.
I remember you said that. He said, I do not like broccoli. And that was a big, joke for a while.
Let's talk about something more serious. You got a chance, a rare chance, to sit down with both presidents in 2009 where they got a chance to reflect a bit. Let's hear from them and then hear from you.
This is very like you and like you as well to refrain from comment on the other political figures, the incoming president, and so on. Why?
To me, that has been the biggest disappointment in the political process up here. There's been this kind of bitterness by a few people to the point where they don't want to have a logical discussion or a civil discussion about policy. They just want to tear you down.
And do you think that's gotten worse since your days in the White House?
I don't know that it's gotten worse, but it's offensive, very offensive. And I agree with the president that when you have somebody you have your own trust in, and that person, for his own gain, thinks it for his own gain, goes out and gives kind of, here's the inside story, here's what they're saying, but here's what's really happening. They're playing the leak game. It's just horrible, and every administration has that. But I think President George Bush here has had been lucky there hadn't been that many of them.
It's moving to see 41 refer to his son as the president here. This is a rare opportunity in history to see that. But reflect on what they were saying and the substance of it.
Well, you know, I think that expresses exactly how both those men felt about the atmosphere in Washington, the poisonous atmosphere that has only worsened over time. And, you know, neither one of them had any taste for it. And I think that is a fair reflection of both their attitudes. You know, there was about those men, they were both of them gentlemen. And, you know, the idea of being a gentleman, the ideal of being a gentleman, has been somewhat lost. I mean, whatever you might say about Donald Trump, the first word that comes to mind when you think of him is not gentleman. And you know, the fact that both those presidents were quiet about their successors, you know, no doubt they had misgivings, to say the least, and criticisms to make maybe privately about how their successors conducted themselves in office, but neither of them spoke up about it. Well, you know, you got Barack Obama now out on the campaign trail, so that's changed. And, of course, you know, Donald Trump lays about himself in all directions, and I don't know what he'll do after he leaves office. But that's sort of emblematic of the attitude those men had. Their belief was that, you know, their time on the world, on the stage had gone, and it was time for them to be off stage and better seen than heard, which both of them observed. They would show up for events. They will appear where they should, and otherwise they lead private lives.
Mr. Britt Hume, you were the first person I thought of when I was woken up in the middle of the night and heard this news and knew we had to prepare for the broadcast. And having you on is really remarkable, and we appreciate your insights this morning, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, sir.
All right.